When Jesus had again crossed over by boat to the other side of the lake, a large crowd gathered round him while he was by the lake. Then one of the synagogue leaders named Jairus came, and when he saw Jesus, he fell at his feet. He pleaded earnestly with him, "My little daughter is dying. Please come and put your hands on her so that she will be healed and live." So Jesus went with him. A large crowd followed and pressed around him, and a woman was there who had been subject to bleeding for 12 years. She had suffered a great deal under the care of many doctors and had spent all she had. Yet instead of getting better, she grew worse. When she heard about Jesus, she came up behind him in the crowd and touched his cloak, because she thought, "If I just touch his clothes, I will be healed." Immediately her bleeding stopped, and she felt in her body that she was freed from her suffering. At once Jesus realized that power had gone out from him. He turned round in the crowd and asked, "Who touched my clothes?" "You see the people crowding against you," his disciples answered, "and yet you ask, 'Who touched me?'" But Jesus kept looking round to see who had done it. Then the woman, knowing what had happened to her, came and fell at his feet, and trembling with fear, told him the whole truth. He said to her, "Daughter, your faith has healed you. Go in peace and be freed from your suffering." While Jesus was still speaking, some people came from the house of Jairus, the synagogue leader. "Your daughter is dead," they said. "Why bother the teacher any more?" Overhearing what they said, Jesus told him, "Don't be afraid, just believe." He did not let anyone follow him except Peter, James, and John, the brother of James. When they came to the home of the synagogue leader, Jesus saw a commotion, with people crying and wailing loudly. He went in and said to them, "Why all this commotion and wailing? The child is not dead, but asleep." But they laughed at him. After he put them out, he took the child's father and mother and the disciples who were with him and went in where the child was. He took her by the hand and said, "Talitha kum," which means, "Little girl, I say to you, get up." Immediately, the girl stood up and began to walk around. She was 12 years old. At this, they were completely astonished. He gave strict orders not to let anyone know about this, and he told them to give her something to eat. Yesterday morning, I was watching my son play football, and as we were there, we were just chatting, as the parents do when the game's not the most exciting. And one of the parents asked me what I was doing for the rest of the weekend, and I thought, "Oh, hello, this is a good evangelistic in, right? We'll have this." And I said, "Well, this afternoon I'm going to be just finishing off preparing my talk for Sunday morning at church." And just waiting, see what happens. And the same dad said, "Oh, what are you talking on?" "Yes, get in." Right. So I explained the passage that we've just read. So I said about Jesus walking around in the countryside, being followed by people. He was approached by a man who said, "My daughter is very, very ill. Could you please come and heal her?" He said, "Yep." And while that was happening, another woman came along who was very ill. She touched his cloak and got better. And Jesus said, "Great." And then as that was happening, somebody came up and said, "Look, don't bother the teacher anymore. The little girl's died." But Jesus said, "That's not going to stop me." Off he went and raised the girl from the dead. One of the dads looked at me and went, "Well, there you go. You've done your preparation. That sounds all right. You can watch the rugby this afternoon, can't you?" So thanks very much. And yes, when you think about it, it is absolutely incredible that we have this story of healing and somebody being raised from the dead. And I think as we read through the Bible, we're kind of used to these things happening, you know, every week. But this is incredible. This is somebody who is healed. This is somebody who was raised from the dead. If this happened today, it would be front page news. There would be inquiries. There would be people trying to debunk it. There'd be people saying this is amazing. And, you know, I think we kind of forget, and I kind of forgot as I was doing this, just how incredible the story is. So as I say, that would have been front page news. And part of me wants to just leave it there, but there are some other stuff that I'd like to look at as well. Some really, really important ideas that are to do with two stories interlinked. So as we've probably seen from this passage, first of all, you have a single story of the girl being raised from the dead. But in the middle of that story, you also have a second one of healing. And they're intertwined. And I think Mark does that on purpose. And as we go through it, you'll see that there are some similarities in the stories, but there are also some startling opposites, which is what I'd like to concentrate on today. So if I could have the first slide, please. So last week, we saw that Jesus was over the other side of the lake, which is a little bit small to see, but that is a map. And he's just come back from the Gentile eastern side of the lake and back to the Jewish western side. It's probably reasonably safe to assume that the crowd that is mentioned was either waiting for him or got wind that he was on his way back, and they appeared really quickly, because in verse 21 it says that a large crowd gathered around him as he was by the lake. When I've just got back from somewhere, if I've been working away, especially if I've been really busy, when I get back, I just want a little bit of time on my own, just to calm down, just to get set again. But there's no such luxury for Jesus. As soon as he's off the boat, back to work. He's got people all around him. It's also good to remind you at this point that Steve mentioned last week that Jesus freed somebody from demon possession. And the symptoms of that looked quite a lot like some forms of mental ill health, but they weren't mental ill health. And that was a point Steve made last week. And this week we are looking at ill health. And we're looking at Jesus healing people from physical sickness and the ultimate sickness, death, which shows even more clearly that Jesus has authority over everything. Okay, so the first difference in these two stories is about holiness and uncleanliness, cleanness and uncleanliness. So last time Jesus was over the lake and he was with a notoriously unclean, unholy man who lived amongst the tombs. And this week, as he gets off the boat, he is met by a religious leader. He's well known for his cleanliness. He's well known for his holiness. He would be respected. The fact that he is a synagogue leader is mentioned by Mark, so it must be important. And Tom Wright, in his commentary, Mark for Everyone, explains that the synagogue leader holds a position of importance, which is probably akin to what we would think of as your old parish priest. So right in the heart of the community, everybody would know who he was. Everybody would go to his church every week and they would look up to him and they would respect him. And it's, you know, it's not to say he wasn't important. He would definitely have been known by the onlookers, and many of them would see him at synagogue week in, week out. And the next Sabbath, after he'd approached Jesus, he would have to look each and every one of these people in the eye. He'd have to stand there and do his rabbinical things, whatever they were, sorry, lack of knowledge on my behalf. But he'd do his stuff at the front, and everybody there would be thinking, well, you're the one who went to Jesus just a few days ago. So he was putting his reputation on the line. The Jewish people had a whole bunch of laws that were about cleanliness, about holiness, and he would have been expected to keep those. Otherwise, he wouldn't have been able to do his day job. He wouldn't have been able to minister to the people. The unnamed woman, who I'd love to be able to give a name, but we haven't got one, so I can't, was as unclean as you get. All of the commentaries that I've read highlight the probability that this woman was outcast from society because of the bleeding that was a result of her condition. That bleeding was considered to be abhorrent by the Jewish people. It was against their laws. She would have to be kept apart from everybody else. She was ritually and ceremonially unclean. It's likely that people would refuse to go near her. They'd refuse to touch her. They'd refuse to spend any time with her, because if they did, they'd become contaminated themselves. They would become unclean. And that's a little bit like the guy known as Legion last time round, who lived amongst tombs, seemed to be mad. People would have stayed away because of his uncleanness. And even more than that, this poor woman had spent all she had looking for a cure for her condition. She had nothing left, monetary-wise. All she had was a tiny amount of faith and a whole suitcase full of desperation. Ooh, is that the wrong way? Here we are. The next difference is the way they sought to approach Jesus. Jairus walked right up to Jesus, in public and seemingly without shame. In my mind's eye, I see Jairus walking up boldly, right up to Jesus. People watching that and standing there and going, oh my days, it's going to be some beef. Oh, it's going to kick off. You know, they don't know what Jairus is doing at this point. He is walking up to Jesus, bold as you like, and people think, what's happening here? Is there going to be a confrontation? Jairus would probably have heard about Jesus' exploits. There would have probably been some guidance from central authorities saying, keep out of his way. But no, he walked up to Jesus and he fell at his feet. This was a religious leader who was supposed to have all the answers. He was supposed to be in tune with God, supposed to have it together. And he threw himself at Jesus' feet, asking him earnestly, begging him earnestly to heal his daughter. D.E. Nynum, in his Pelican Gospel commentary on Mark, makes the following point. The Jewish authorities might affect to think Jesus an impostor, but there were those among them who, when trouble forced them to face realities, could not help admitting his power and even begging for its exercise, with a public display of humility which showed that they really recognised its character and source. Which, when you remove the 1960s language, basically means there are no atheists in foxholes, and when the going gets tough, people end up going to Jesus. The exact opposite was the woman. She was hidden amongst the crowd. She was unnoticed. She was afraid. She was very, very tentative. Where Jairus was shameless, she was full of shame. In my mind's eye, I see her approaching timidly, bent over, perhaps wearing a hood so people didn't see who she was, moving quickly and quietly through the crowd, trying to not be noticed. She was so afraid that she couldn't even face Jesus. She came up behind him. She slipped unseen into his presence, and all she could manage was to touch the back of his cloak. She must have been close to him, but still she was overlooked, or disregarded may have been a better word. Then she received her healing through that simple act of faith. It wasn't grand, it wasn't at the big tent revival, it wasn't at the front where everyone saw her, but she was healed quietly and with nobody apart from Jesus noticing. We also look at the nature of what was happening. We don't know what was wrong with Jairus' daughter. But we know it was so serious that he was very worried, and it escalated really quickly. She went from very ill to death in the course of this narrative. There's no detail about her and the condition, but there are lots of details in other parts, so perhaps it's not important. But Mark does see fit to mention that she was 12 years old and that she died. Jairus came to Jesus when he knew his daughter was seriously ill. His faith, or his desperation, was enough for that. But do you think he would have come if she'd already died? Would the duty of what he had to do as a father have outweighed his desire to come to Jesus for help? Would the circumstances of the death be too much for him? Would it be too much for him to believe that Jesus could do anything about it? Sickness is one thing. Well, is death another? Is one thing okay for Jesus to sort out, but another thing too hard for him? The woman, on the other hand, has her symptoms and her difficulties described in graphic detail. We know all about her. We know about the fact that the full 12 years of Jairus' daughter's life She has suffered with a condition that causes her to bleed. The New King James Version, in its beautiful way, describes it as a fountain of her blood. Ew. So whatever the condition was that caused it, we know what the symptoms were, and it was likely to be incredibly physically painful, embarrassing, and have this huge stigma attached to it that we've talked about. One of these people had a long-running problem, the symptoms of which we knew, and nothing could be done about. The other appears to have been a lot more sudden. It seems to have got worse very quickly, and then got as bad as it could possibly get. And Jesus healed them both. And what about the who you are requesting for? We see the woman's actions and we notice that she comes to Jesus for herself. She has a problem which she can't fix and nobody else can fix. She has nothing left. Her only option, it seems, is to come to Jesus. He is her last resort, but it's for herself. For her own faltering faith brings her to Jesus. From that perspective, there's no wider benefit for her seeking this healing. It's purely for her, and there's no indication even that her healing would make a difference to anyone else's life. We don't hear about family. We don't hear about friends. We don't hear about her interacting with anybody at all. She came on her own, and there's nothing to say that anyone put her up to it or told her about him. When she'd been healed, no one pointed her out. Her healing was an intensely private thing. She received the healing without a word, and she was prepared to slip away with what she'd received, and nobody would have known. Jesus knew how something had happened, and he wouldn't let it go unnoticed. I think there's a massive irony that this dear woman, who had an incredibly personal, embarrassing problem, came to Jesus in secret, was healed and was prepared to slip away. Well, we're talking about her over 2,000 years later. And her request that may have seemed selfish to her, may have seemed inward, will continue to bless others for as long as this book is read. Jairus asks on behalf of his daughter. He comes to Jesus on her behalf, asking him to come and heal her. We could, in our language today, call this intercession, perhaps. We could get tied in knots about personal salvation or parental responsibility, but what we have here is a concerned father who's doing everything he can for a daughter he loves. And let's not forget that this is a patriarchal society where the man in the story gets name-checked, Jairus. The woman with the bleeding, no name. The daughter, no name. So Jairus is willing to put his responsibility, his reputation as a man, on the line for his daughter, who isn't really viewed as particularly important by the society. Jairus' daughter was dead when Jesus arrived. So, if anything, she couldn't have had faith at that point. But Jairus still had some. Whether, at the point where the others came up and said to him, well, your daughter's died, did all of his faith disappear at that point? Did he go, well, Jesus wouldn't let him. He said, come on, let's go. One of the beautiful aspects of this story, and my favourite bit, I think, is that both people fell at Jesus' feet. Jairus comes and begs for Jesus to heal his daughter. He throws himself down before anything happens. The woman falls at Jesus' feet after she has received her healing. Verse 33 says she was in fear and trembling when she realised she had been found out. Her faith was small, but it was large enough to bring her to the Saviour, even though she barely knew him and was frightened of him. Perhaps this was the lifetime of mistreatment she'd suffered. Perhaps this was a result of an Old Testament type theology where God was prone to anger and punishment. But she fell at his feet and she told him the whole truth. She confessed what she'd done. Jairus submitted to Jesus in advance. The woman submitted after. The result was the same, but the timing was different. So what can we take away from this? Well, firstly, there is the absolute obvious one. Jesus can and will and does heal. Secondly, there's the approach. We can come to Jesus and ask for healing, for comfort, or for any of the other promises that he's given us. And we can be bold about that. We can understand what we're doing with as much faith as we can muster. Or we can crawl to Jesus with nothing left, with desperation, with that tiny, tiny bit of faith that maybe we don't even think it will work, but we're trying anyway. It can be in public, it can be in private, but either way, we can't sneak up on Jesus. He knows where we are, and he knows what he's going to do for us. Sickness and death, when we do build up the courage to approach Jesus, there is nothing that is too hard for him. Not sickness, not death, not the biggest thing you can think of in your life. Nothing is too hard for him. Even when we've tried everything we can, even when we've given everything, we've tried and tried and tried, nothing is impossible. Even if things change while we're waiting, like Jairus, he came to Jesus with a sick daughter and who soon became a dead daughter. Nothing is too hard for our God. We can approach for ourselves, or we can approach for others. Our timing may seem strange. Our motives may not always be 100% holy and pure. But God knows the wider context and the wider implications of what we're doing. And whilst we may not receive what we think we want immediately, God's moving all of these pieces together, and maybe your story is interlinked with somebody else's. And lastly, whether it's before or after the miraculous, we will fall at Jesus' feet. It says, every knee shall bow and every tongue confess that Jesus is Lord. Maybe you can fall at his feet before, maybe you'll fall at his feet afterwards, but when Jesus shows up, you've got no choice. And finally, I really like a couple of the verses that it says. One is at the end of verse 34, and one is what Jesus says in verse 36. One is in the context of a blessing that's been received, and the other is in the context of a blessing yet to come. And it's with a combination of those words that I'd like to conclude today. Go in peace and be freed from your suffering. Do not be afraid. Just believe.